is Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England.
What's up, everybody?
Hello, welcome back.
Thanks for joining us today on this fine, beautiful, hopefully day outside.
We say hopefully because, as we've talked about, we pre-record some of our episodes due to our busy schedules.
Yeah, so on the day that this comes out, I have no idea if it's going to be beautiful, but I hope so.
I hope so. It'll be May.
It'll be May.
Well, it is May.
But it will be warm, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Sunny. Sensual.
Flowers blooming more.
No more rain.
Hope so.
So I hope that's what you are experiencing today. Katie and I were just talking, guys. And, you know, a lot of our listeners will message us and say, I like hearing about all your pets, your pet stories. You know, some people will message and say, I have this and that, and I have a few of these. And we're like, I specifically am like, I love that. Thank you for sharing. And I think to nobody's surprise, we have an update for my pet collection.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. My dad knows about this. My mother does not. And I think by the time this comes out, it's a good enough cushion in between. The last 2 weeks, I went home 2 times I had a few things going on in my life. My dog Blackjack died. He was 16 in 3 months. So he really was kind of defying logic at that point. I think my theory is that he took some of our family cat, Tallahassee. I think he took some of her lives, probably, because he was well beyond his time. But so I went home to be with them and some other family things. And in that time, I somehow, and maybe in my sadness, maybe in my addiction, procured a crested gecko, is what they're called. And it's funny because when I went home the second time, my mom had just listened to the episode that had come out in which I revealed that I had purchased a mouse.
Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this seems to be a theme of your mother realizing you've acquired more animals through the podcast.
Yep. Hi, Mom. And so it had been about 3 weeks to 4 weeks when I had gotten Devereaux, my mouse, to when that podcast episode came out. And so it was enough of a buffer time, and my mom actually laughed. So I was like, okay, great. So when I get this gecko, I'm going to hold off and tell her through here. So, Mom, I have purchased another animal. I actually got it the day after Blackjack died. I had already arranged to pick it up, and then Blackjack died. And I was like, well, I guess at least I have something to look forward to with this animal. So she's a crested gecko. Her name is Violet. I did not name her, but I liked the name.
She's beautiful.
She's very cute. I'm part of all these Facebook groups that are like Pets of New England, Rehoming Exotic Animals in New England, Rabbits of Maine, Farm Animals of Maine, just random stuff. Cause one, it's fun to look at. And two, I have a problem, right? So I met up with this girl who, was a avid reptile owner, and she was looking to, you know, fix her supply. She wanted to downsize a little bit. She posted this pictures of Violet in her enclosure. I said, I would love to buy her. She was close enough to me that I could pick it up. I was like, great. So I got it, and it was all good. And then, you know, I noticed within the first few days that her tank, the doors are kind of finicky. So you can close it and, like, lock it, and sometimes it won't lock. And, you know, the door might, like, open a little bit.
Oh, no.
Yeah, do you know where this is going? It was a Sunday. It was last Sunday. And I woke up at I woke up at 11:30. I was living great. I feed all my reptiles right before I go to bed the night before, my usual. And I guess maybe the lock didn't work right. Or maybe it wasn't latched properly. But I woke up, went out and did my rounds. Hi, Ladybug. Hi, Maggie. Oh, going around to all my reptiles. Hi. Because I'm weird. And then I noticed that Violet's door was ajar.
Oh, God.
And I said, oh, boy. And I looked. And it's not a very big tank. And I looked. She wasn't on the sides of the tank. She wasn't in her food bowl. She wasn't, like, in the leaves. She wasn't even on the ground. And I said, Well, fuck. What the actual fuck? And I started to panic.
When you texted me, Liz, a series of texts, all caps. It's like, oh, no. I was like, do I have to drive up to Portland, Maine and help Liz, like, dismantle the planes?
Yep, it was close to that. So my first instinct was to, one, go, this is not good. And then my second instinct was to check my cameras. So I have two cameras, because I'm an idiot, in my one in my room and one in the living room, facing the living room, for my cats when I'm at work so I can watch them and check in on them because I'm neurotic. And I was like, I'm going to watch the video. It picks up and records videos of movement and sound.
Perfect.
I was like, perfect. I'm going to get to know. There wasn't a single. There were some videos like throughout the night of like Ladybug coming into the living room, Maggie at the food bowl, but none of, you know, watching a gecko crawl out of the door of her cage.
Well, that's insane because the way that your camera is in the living room, it's like directed at the gecko cage.
Literally, literally.
So is she that stealthy?
She must have been. I don't know how she did it. Damn. And then I was like, when I was texting you frantically, I said, okay, I don't know where she is. I don't think the cats got to her because, one, there would be a mess. Mm-hmm. I'm sure of it. Mm-hmm. Blood at the very least. And two, their mouths, they're cats. Their mouths are relatively small. I don't think they would have been able to fit her in their mouths and not make a bloody mess like chewing up pieces. That's terrible, I know. But so I was like, okay, so I think we're good for now. I scoured every inch of my apartment. Under the fridge, behind the fridge, under the microwave, on the tops of the curtain rods, in between the blinds, underneath all of the tanks, in drawers, in under my chair, everywhere. And then you brought up a great point to me.
I...
which was very valid.
I felt so bad. I just... my brain, I swear to God, I have contamination OCD.
Yeah.
My brain is very... germ oriented,
which is fair.
As a kid, I've always been obsessed with like, oh, you touch a reptile, you contract salmonella.
It's true.
And so I was like, that, you know, that's true, that's valid. But then you brought up a good point, Liz, where you were like, I have to take, you know, one of my cats, Maggie, to the vet. Ladybug's gonna be alone.
Yep.
You know, worst case scenario, she eats the gecko.
Yep.
And I said, well, more of a worst case scenario is that Ladybug eats the gecko and contracts salmonella.
In which I went from being like, oh no, my new gecko, I'm going to find her in a week because the smell's going to be strong, to she's going to kill my cat.
I'm so sorry.
And I was like, this was at like maybe 1:30 now. Mm-hmm. I had to bring Maggie to the vet at 2:30. And I was just sitting there like, well, I'm going to lose all my pets today. Maggie was just going for a follow-up for her ears, but so she was fine. But I was like, great, going to have Ladybug alone, the chaotic demon spawn that's on crack 100% of the time. And when I come back, I'm going to have two dead animals, a bloodied, chewed up gecko that I got 4 days ago, and my beloved foot fetish cat. So I was
on top of losing... your dog.
On top of literally losing my dog, which was the biggest pain of my life. Mm-hmm. The saddest thing. I'm still processing. It's been less than a week since I lost him. I'm devastated. And now I have all this. So I was like, great. So naturally, I panicked and I said, Sean, I texted Sean, my boyfriend. I said, you need to come over right now. Of course, he worked midnight to 8 a.m. So he was sleeping. Oh, and he didn't wake up until, I don't know, 4. And I said, Sean, you need to come over here right now because I need you to help me look for Violet. And he was like, what the actual fuck? He finally gets here around like 5:30, maybe. And I'm like, you need to help me pull the fridge out. I can't do it by myself. You need to help me tip the chair back so I can see underneath. It's a big, you know, like two-person almost love seat. You need to help me with the table. I need your perspective, you're tall, look above the blinds. I was like, you need to help me. And he was like, he looked at me and he was like, just before we get started, are you sure you haven't really, like, bitten off more than you can chew? Like, you got another animal? You know, like, maybe this is too much for you? And I was like, if you keep speaking, you will be just as dead as Violet.
Oh my God.
Okay? So he was like, all right, all right. And he helped me. And I kid you not, he was there less than 10 minutes and we found her. Less than 10 minutes. And I had been searching for literally 6 hours.
That's always how it goes. Mm-hmm. That's always.
Mm-hmm. So when you walk into my apartment, there's this big closet and it has the water heater in there. And I was going to check, but I did very briefly throughout the day and I was like, I couldn't find her. And so there's a whole bunch of stuff in the way. So I had Sean help me move things out of the way. And I was like, okay, you're skinnier than me. Like maybe you can kind of angle yourself and you're taller, like around so you could look in the back. And then as soon as I turn the flashlight on, I was like, so I'll have you come over here. And over here, I found her. She was on an extra metal rack I had stored back there, like a shelf that goes on my reptile rack. She was just chilling. She was straight hanging on next to the water heater, looking at me like, hey, how's it going?
That little biatch.
Uh-huh. And the funny part is that the distance from where her cage is to that closet, 12 feet, mm-hmm. maybe more, mm-hmm. Wow, I'm impressed, to say the least.
And how she got from point A to point B without the cats getting to her?
I don't know how she did it. She must have climbed the walls.
Yeah.
That's the only way. Or maybe it was when they come in and they sleep with me periodically mm-hmm. throughout the night. So, man, let's just say crisis fucking averted.
Oh, my God.
It was terrible. It was terrible.
I can't even, oh my God,
I had
Liz.
So much going on mentally, and then I was like, great.
Oh, perfect. Awesome. The door is fucking open. Mm-hmm. Where is my brand new gecko?
Yep. It was great. So anyway, just wanted to update all my fellow animal lovers that don't worry, there's a new animal in my life, and I think that's probably going to be it for a while, guys. Don't worry, Mom. It's probably going to be it for a while. It is a lot to take care of all those reptiles, because now I have 7 pets total. My cats, 3 geckos, a frog, and a mouse. So I think we're good for now. And then my coworker, when I was back home, texted me and said, do you want 6 ferrets? And I was like, theoretically, abso-fucking-lutely. Realistically, 2? And she was like, no, my niece doesn't want to separate them. And I was like, darn. It's probably for the better.
Oh my God.
Yep. So anyway, guys, I have a problem and I think we could probably hold an intervention for me quite soon.
But you know what though? We can laugh about it. Yeah. And it's funny.
It is funny.
Because she's okay.
She's okay. She's beautiful. Ladybug did not contract salmonella. So we're good, guys. We're good. Oh, that was a nice long story for your Thursday morning.
You know what, though? We need some uplifting shit before we get into cases like these, it's honestly. True.
And you know, that was a kind of roller coaster of a story. So, unfortunately, our case today is not a roller coaster in the sense that it's just all sad. Mm-hmm. There's no up and down and surprises. It's all sad.
And it's another unsolved one.
Oh, we do that, don't we?
We do. And it's so frustrating because it's like you want to have closure by the end of the case.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they found the person responsible. They right. know who did this.
Right.
Or like our last episode, they know who the victims are. But it's like
you don't know anything.
You don't get that closure and it's very frustrating.
It is really hard. So today is no exception. Mm-hmm. But it's a good one. It's, you know, it's small town New Hampshire. And I think it's, like we always say, it's important to cover, so.
I think cases like these are more important to cover mm-hmm. because the ones where we have to really bust our asses to find information to make an episode on because mm-hmm. there's not a whole lot out there.
Right.
I feel like it makes it all the more important.
I would agree with you. And without further ado, we will be covering
the murders of Stella Bolton and James Moore.
Okay, we're going to start with our sources per usual, but do keep in mind, everyone, that this is a relatively quick case, and unfortunately, there's not a ton of info on it. It's all very repetitive, and like you said earlier, Katie, it's unsolved still, mm-hmm. which is tough. But anyway, you want to tell us your sources?
Sure. I have information from WMUR.com, the New Hampshire Department of Justice. I found a couple different articles on Seacoast Online, which is always a great resource, mm-hmm. Foster's Daily Democrat, Patch.com, and the Portsmouth Police Department Facebook page.
Oh, all right. you seem to have found a lot more than I could. So okay. Props to you. I had Seacoast Online as well. I had 3 articles from them, which we like Seacoast Online, I think, coming from our hometown especially. But I do like Seacoast Online. Also, WMUR, which is the local news station for anyone who's not from New Hampshire. I also found information on Patch. And then I also got information from coldcasenewengland.org. And that's it.
Sweet.
Great. All right. Let's get started with this case. There's something about unsolved cases that really, from every article and every newspaper article and everything you see, there's just the same circulating information, and it's nowhere near enough to get any kind of answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that the police departments and the investigators definitely have more that they haven't released, but from a true crime standpoint, talking about it, doing research, there is just nothing. Not anything that we can really even touch upon, which sucks.
Yeah, and I think it's really frustrating too, because both of the victims in this case are people of color, and we'll get into that too. So it's always so frustrating when the media neglects cases where the victims are people of color.
Yeah.
They would rather focus on other cases where, say, a white woman goes missing or is murdered.
Right.
So we'll get into it. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of different circumstances around this case. Even if there is not a lot, I think it's very much worth talking about.
Oh, agreed. Agreed. So let's take a second to talk about Stella Bolton and James Moore.
Mm-hmm.
So Stella was actually born and raised in Trinidad, and she ultimately moved to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which is where this crime takes place.
Mm-hmm.
She was, and we have the one picture of her, and she looks like such a sweet old lady.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, she was actually known as being like very pleasant, very grandmother-like, and like acting as a bonus grandmother to all these children in their neighborhood, which at the time was called Mariner's Village. She loved cooking in true grandma style. Loved it. And also, this made me smile, she loved to play bingo. That was her thing, and she was very good at it.
Damn right.
I love that energy. I love the grandma energy. So she was just very well liked in the neighborhood, and there were a lot of children who really enjoyed her presence, especially because she loved to make cookies and give them out. And this made me laugh because it's so me. She was actually known as the bird lady because she was known for really going out of her way to feed the town's birds.
That's so sweet.
Which is like amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the reasons why there are signs in parks and stuff that are like, please do not feed the squirrels. That's me, 100%. So she just seemed like a really nice person. And you know, coming from Trinidad, that's a big transition too.
Mm-hmm. James was a Navy veteran who had served in 3 wars.
That blows my mind.
It's crazy.
Wow.
He was also retired from the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard.
Hmm.
The dynamic between James and Stella was roommates and longtime friends.
Right.
There's some speculation that a man and a woman can't live together without being more than just friends. That's not true.
It's very old-timey thinking.
They were very good friends, and they looked out for one another. Mm-hmm. It was a very pure friendship where they just helped each other out.
Yep.
And enjoyed each other's company in their retirement.
Exactly. And it turns out that James, who also went by JJ, was really good friends with Stella's husband, who had died. And so when he did die, they kind of moved in together because they knew each other and they both didn't want to live alone. And there really was, it seems, nothing romantic about their relationship.
They're looking out for each other.
Truly. They were in their 60s. Yeah. Very normal. It's not a weird thing, especially they're adults. They can do whatever they want.
James also had diabetes and gout, and he used a cane. So Stella helped him when he needed it.
Yeah.
And people in the neighborhood said that they would see James, aka JJ, often sitting on the porch, just watching everything going on, saying hi to the kids as they walked by. Mm-hmm. Really, really sweet people.
Yes. And then I found in one of the articles I read that every single night at 5 p.m., without fail, James would sit on the porch, crack open a beer and just people watch.
I love it.
Without fail. That's awesome.
I love it.
That is so funny.
So both JJ and Stella were considered to be friendly, open, compassionate. Police believe that this is the reason that they were targeted.
Mm-hmm. They were easy targets, really.
I personally think that they were targeted because they were both open and friendly and compassionate because they were doing so while being Black.
Oh, yeah.
This was in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
Portsmouth is known now as being more liberal.
Yeah.
Still not really a whole lot of diversity going on.
It's New England, Katie.
Yeah. But Portsmouth has, like, a pride parade.
Yep.
More accepting.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, even so, a couple months ago, there was a bunch of skinheads and white supremacists that were showing up to pride events.
Oh.
A few months ago, there was a drag queen read aloud to children.
Yes,
and
yeah.
They came and they protested that and stood outside making hateful comments. And so a lot of people make Portsmouth out to be this, like, super liberal, mm-hmm. open, we love everybody, and yeah. It's just not the case.
Yeah.
It was more so not open in the 90s, and, you know, unfortunately, Stella and JJ, they were Black.
Right.
So I do feel as though that's why they were targeted in the crime that we'll talk about.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, that's definitely one of the things about history and now that seems like it'll never change, and that's people of color are victimized often, way more often than white people, whether it be they are the victims of crimes like this or they are accused of crimes and put in jail and serving long sentences,
mm-hmm.
Just because of their skin color. Unfortunately, that's just been true for the entirety of human existence,
mm-hmm.
which is unfair. And just because we're in New England and it's mostly white people, and it's sad. And I think you're right, Katie. I think they were targeted because of their race. And also because they were elderly,
mm-hmm.
Which means they couldn't put up a fight. And because they were doing well for themselves.
Yep.
And they were friendly.
For sure.
Easy targets, unfortunately. Very vulnerable. So February 16th of 1991, it's super early in the morning, like 1:30 a.m. And the Portsmouth Fire Department was alerted to Rock Hill Avenue for a fire. So it was actually a two-alarm fire, which means that there wasn't just, like, a fire truck there. There was other departments that were there to help. Technically speaking, a two-fire alarm is less so severe than, I think I've heard of, like, a four-alarm, five-alarm.
Five-alarm is, like, the worst.
Yes, yeah. So it was on the fire alarm scale, it wasn't as high, but it did require extra assistance. So when police and fire departments arrived to this location, they discovered a blazing fire, but they also discovered two deceased bodies. It was discovered after some investigating that the fire started in the back of the house, the very back of the house, and then into the left rear bedroom and had even spread to the house next door. But
wow.
It didn't come forward so much to the front of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you hear this and you think, okay, so they found two bodies. And as you know, we've been talking about Stella and JJ. Unfortunately, that was Stella and JJ. They had both perished. And naturally, you know, when you find a fire and you find bodies, you think, okay, they died from the fire. And that's terrible. Later, an autopsy was performed on both of them. The reason they do this, even though it seems cut and dry for a fire, be like, well, they burned to death, duh. Well, no, they do that even with, in this situation, like, were they alive when the fire started? Like, did they have soot in their lungs, meaning like they were breathing in? Did they die of smoke inhalation? Whatever. Carbon monoxide poisoning. So when the medical examiner kind of got their bodies on the table, they realized Stella and JJ didn't die from the fire. They had been stabbed many times each. Yeah.
So this case was then classified as a homicide.
Naturally.
Because it seems as though Stella and JJ were stabbed to death,
mm-hmm.
and then their home was set on fire to get rid of evidence.
Which, I don't know, guys, just as like an FYI, and I've seen it in crime shows and talked about it on here and then other podcasts, setting a fire to your dead body, like your victims, doesn't really cover it.
And if you stab someone to death, there's still going to be stab wounds on their charred body.
Yep. And stab wounds do go all the way to the bone, usually. Mm-hmm. Make marks on the bone.
So a medical examiner can determine the real cause of death, just as an FYI.
Just a little tip for you guys, if you're ever going to commit homicide, then arson. So, yeah, they mm-hmm. had been stabbed.
James was 73 at this time, and Stella was 68.
Oh, my God. What's really interesting is that not too long after the fire, you know, we talked about there's a whole bunch of kids in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. A neighborhood boy actually found an 8-inch knife that had clearly been discarded, like just thrown out nearby. And so police immediately suspected, okay, this is probably the murder weapon. Mm-hmm. It looked like it had just been thrown out like a car window or just like willy-nilly because it was, you know, trying to get rid of evidence. So I think that's a good bet that that was the murder weapon. And, you know, like we said, they were stabbed. Mm-hmm. So it's not a far reach.
So like you said, Liz, Stella especially was very known to be friendly to kids in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. She would give them candy and cookies that she baked.
Mm.
I grew up with an old lady like this in my neighborhood where she would bake everybody cookies and give all of us kids candy.
Yeah.
And it's just like a grandmotherly type figure.
Yeah.
Some people think that this is weird, like, don't take candy from strangers. That's not a stranger.
No, it's not. No.
Your neighbor who is friendly mm-hmm. and everybody looks out for everybody, that is not a stranger.
Yeah.
That behavior is not suspicious. People are trying to say, like, oh, well, Stella was too open and she would give kids candy. Yeah, because she's like a grandmotherly figure.
Yeah.
And she's also from Trinidad, so that culture is very, you know, generous. Mm-hmm. It takes a village.
Right, yeah, literally.
The two of them were very well liked in the neighborhood.
So naturally, this was a big shock.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, because they're two old people. Like, what would be a motive for that?
Right. The neighborhood, I guess, was sometimes referred to as ghetto or a cardboard village. Mm. A neighbor of Stella and James actually wrote in to Seacoast Online mm-hmm. after one of their articles, you know, used those words to describe their neighborhood.
Right.
The neighbor was like, you don't know what you're talking about. This is a working class neighborhood.
Yeah.
Everybody looks out for everybody. Mm-hmm. We have each other's backs. And people would joke around that, you know, this is Mariner's Village, mm-hmm. but it really is a village because it takes a village. Absolutely. And we all look out for each other and we all have each other's backs.
Which is awesome and a sweet sentiment.
Mm-hmm. Kids would actually take turns shoveling snow to make a path to the front door for Stella and James.
Aww.
And they would fight over it. They'd be like, it's my turn to shovel for Stella. It's my turn. No, you did it last week. Like,
that's cute.
Really, really sweet.
Aww. It's so obvious that they were well-liked.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just, you know, this shocked the neighborhood for more, like I said, more reasons than just it was Stella and James. But because, hello, this is a normal neighborhood. And calling it the Portsmouth Ghetto or whatever was very wrong on that journalist's part, on anyone's part who called it that. They were known for being a tight-knit community. And crime wasn't exactly, like, a huge reoccurring thing there.
Mm-hmm.
This was surprising. So the only thing that the police really could think of for a theory as to why anyone would do this is really a stretch, in my opinion. They're really reaching here. And listen, I get it, but it doesn't seem likely to me. So a possible motive was maybe due to some recent bingo winnings. Turns out that Stella and JJ, you know, they loved bingo, and they had recently struck some luck and won a decent amount of money. They never said how much money, but a decent amount where they were like, yeah, that was a good Monday night bingo sesh. So they wondered maybe someone local who maybe knew of people who went to the bingo hall or was working it or whatever, that they maybe knew that Stella and JJ had come into this little bit of money and that maybe they had used that as a motive and their kind demeanor and elderly physical conditions to take advantage of that. But that was just a theory and there was nothing that ever panned out for that as well.
Wow.
So they had no idea. That was just them kind of grasping at straws. Which is unfortunate, but mm-hmm. that was really all they had.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. They also thought that the murder was committed by a local resident. Portsmouth Police Detective Aaron Goodwin claimed that he didn't know what the murderers wanted to take, like if they were there to rob or, you know, get jewelry, steal money, whatever. He didn't know if it was a robbery gone wrong, but he said, quote, if they had just asked, JJ and Stella would have just given it to them, quote. So clearly, you know, if it was a local, maybe they weren't directly targeted because anyone who knew them would know that they would not put up a fight. They mm-hmm. would not ask questions. They would just say, okay, you want money? Here's the money. Like, here's what I've got, you know? So clearly it doesn't seem like just a robbery. Someone mm-hmm. was maybe out to get them or wanted to kill. Ridiculous.
That's just, wow.
Yeah, it's sad.
Despite numerous interviews conducted and several pieces of evidence found at the scene, this case has not been solved and it remains cold.
That's terrible. It's been 31 years?
Mm-hmm.
Just about. That's terrible.
In 2011, Portsmouth police told news source WMUR that they believe people in Portsmouth know what happened that morning and mm-hmm. aren't saying what they know.
Wow. That's bold, but I think I might agree a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody knows something.
Maybe not so much in the neighborhood itself,
mm-hmm.
but someone could have seen, you know, a car driving mm-hmm. away. Mm-hmm. Someone could have known something. People talk.
Right. Oh, people talk, all right.
You don't just kill somebody and not say anything to anybody.
Yeah, I can't imagine I would be able to shut my mouth.
Mm-mm. Portsmouth police are still searching for who could have done this.
Right.
You mentioned him, Aaron Goodwin.
Yep.
He stated, we're not looking to charge anyone who just has information. If you were living in this community and you heard something, anything, come forward. Let us know what it is.
Mm.
There's also another police detective. Her name is Rochelle Jones. She actually grew up in the neighborhood with Stella and James, and she took over their case in August of 2021.
Nice.
She was just 14 at the time of the murders. She was interviewed because of her personal connection with them and her willingness to take on this case to get right. justice for, you know, the old lady that would give her and her friends and her siblings candy.
Yep.
Like, she has a personal connection, and I think it's really sweet that she's so determined.
Right. I think so, too.
She stated, we'd just be outside playing, and we'd see Stella and would stop and say, Stella, Stella, hi. We went up to her, and I just remember my memory was always that she always wore these cute, nice, fun sundresses,
mm-hmm.
and we'd go up to hug her, and she was too big for me to get my arms around.
Aww.
She was just like this sweet, squishy grandmother.
Aww.
Mm-hmm.
Grandmas definitely do have that distinct, squishy, big hug kind of energy. Mm-hmm. I feel that way when I hug my grandma. I love it. It's like a specific kind of
yes.
hug. It's lovely. Yep. I love it.
So warm and sweet yeah. and caring.
Yeah.
So I don't normally give kudos to police officers or detectives.
Almost never, no.
But I will say Rochelle Jones, she is very determined to get this case solved.
Yeah.
She also said in an interview that she herself is biracial.
Yep.
So she feels a very personal connection to them, aside from having known them growing up.
Yeah.
And she feels like their race probably was an element in their murder.
Yeah. Really, it's definitely shouldn't be put to the side. That's definitely a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Stella and James are buried in Portsmouth's Calvary Cemetery, and they share a headstone.
Oh.
James also has a grave marker memorializing him.
Because
he was a veteran.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That is right. Wow. As far as I know, Portsmouth Crime Stoppers are in the police department are offering a monetary reward for any information regarding their murder. The last I saw was $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, hey, that's a pretty penny. That's a pretty penny. So,
hello. Hi. If anyone heard anything, saw anything.
Mm-hmm.
I know the whole thing of snitches get stitches. Mm-hmm.
Get over it.
Get over it. say something because yeah. these people are innocent and they didn't deserve any of this.
No, they did not.
Anyone with any information about the murders of Stella Bolton and James Moore are asked to please call the Seacoast Crime Stoppers. Their phone number is 603-431-1199. You can also reach out to call Detective Rochelle Jones personally.
Wow.
She is looking for any and all information about this case.
Mm-hmm.
Her phone number is 603-610-7503.
Awesome. Great. She's so dedicated.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, one of the articles had such a great pictures of her with the burnt door mm-hmm. and like going through, she was at their grave site. It was really nice. She's clearly very dedicated,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome. But it's just so puzzling, like who would do that to these people? And was it really racially motivated?
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Yeah.
It breaks your heart. And they look like so nice.
Such good people. We have the nicest picture of them on our Instagram and our website.
Yeah. They have really big smiles. Mm-hmm. And, man, looking at Stella, you really can tell she's grandmotherly. It's awesome. And I did love that tidbit about James where he just every night, 5 p.m. sharp, it's like, oh, gotta crack open a cold one, sit in my rocking chair on the porch and just watch. Just watch.
Enjoying their retirement like they should be.
Yeah. I know. He, 3 wars.
Mm-hmm.
Whew, that's a brave man right there.
And this is the thanks that he gets.
I know. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you guys listening are from Portsmouth, know any from Portsmouth, or know someone who was in Portsmouth in 1991, please encourage them to think back and try and remember if they do have any information about this case.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine because it was 2 black individuals, it maybe didn't get as much news attention. It might not have, honestly.
And if their neighborhood, too, is being referred to as the ghetto of Portsmouth and the cardboard village, then that also makes me pretty convinced that it didn't get as much media attention as it maybe would have if... Mm-hmm. They were white elderly people living in a more rich neighborhood.
I agree. I think that's probably a big factor in it.
Mm-hmm.
And also why maybe we can't find a whole bunch of information.
Right.
I went on newspapers.com and searched every keyword I could think of for 1991 in New Hampshire and some surrounding states. I did Stella Bolton. I did James Moore. I did arson. I did fire. I did Portsmouth fire. I did house fire. I did everything. I couldn't find a single thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and maybe that's because of the race. Who knows?
Yeah. Fun fact, Mariner's Village and Stella and James's home has since been torn down. It's now the site of a development called Blue Heron Lane.
Mm.
So, you know, we've talked about it before where things get torn down and renamed and it really doesn't help an ongoing investigation that's grown cold and maybe has been reopened because you lose out a lot of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And even talking about it, people are like, oh, Mariner's Village, where's that?
Right.
It's been completely redone. It's the site of a new development.
Yeah.
Completely new name. So
any evidence that was left around, if there was, definitely is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You guys should definitely let us know what you think about this case, your theories. And again, if you have any information, you can call those numbers that Katie listed. Obviously, even though it's been 31 years, it's not unthought of. It's not forgotten. So mm-hmm. definitely take those steps if you are able to. So if you guys want to tell us what you think about this episode, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at TrueCrimeNE.
All lowercase.
And you can also send us an email at our email account, which would be TrueCrimeNE@gmail.com.
You could also head over to our website, TrueCrimeNE.com. We have a submission tool where you can send us your thoughts on this case, your thoughts in general.
Yeah,
sure. Tell us how good of a day you're having.
What are you thinking about today?
And send us cases based in New England that you would like for us to cover in a future episode. We would love to hear from you either way, even if you are anonymous, which our submission tool allows for.
Yes. Isn't that convenient?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely take a look at the website, too. There's a lot of great stuff on there from every episode has a page. Katie does amazing work with the case profiles, which are all people of color who do not have a lot of information on their deaths, and it's all mostly unsolved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great page. She does a lot of hard work, so definitely check those out. Yeah, and then with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye. Thank you.